Welcome to this episode of Smart Citizen. We're really excited to interview school board candidate who's also incumbent on the school board, Victoria Manning. And we're going to dive right into the conversation. I think it's going to be really exciting. I'm Emily Bowes, and this is Smart Citizen. So welcome. So glad that you're joining us for this conversation. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run for school board, maybe in the first place, and why you're running for re-election now.
Sure. Thanks, Emily. So I grew up, I consider Virginia Beach my home, but I grew up in a small town called Woodstock, Virginia. I'm a farm girl. We lived on a small self-sustaining farm. And at the age of 19, I just decided that I wanted to seek more opportunity. And I decided to move to Virginia Beach for the summer to work. And my first job was at the Jewish Mother, a restaurant. If you've lived here a number of years, you would know what that is. And actually people came from all over the country to come to this restaurant as well. And over about the next decade, I worked and, well, first of all, at the end of the summer, it was supposed to just be the summer. At the end of the summer, I said, Virginia Beach is my home. I'm not leaving. So I truly love Virginia Beach and I do consider it my home. And then over the next 10 years, I worked and went to school. My parents couldn't afford me to send me to school, so I was on my own. And after about 10 years, I ended up graduating from Old Dominion University, with my bachelor's degree, becoming the first in my family to achieve a bachelor's. Wow. And I'm very proud of that. I met my husband, Scott, and he was a naval officer at the time. He served 30 years in the Navy and just retired a few years ago as a Navy captain. And we have two boys who are currently Virginia Beach High School students, our city public schools. And so I ran for office back in 2016 was when I first ran for office. I wasn't really politically involved, didn't know a whole lot about politics. You know, I had my own views and I was an active voter and an educated voter. But I got involved in some school issues when my sons were, my son came home one time from school and said, and I asked him, I said, why aren't you studying? Don't you have a test tomorrow? I knew he'd had a test. And he said, well, I don't need to study. And I said, why not? He said, well, I can retake the test. If I, you know, I don't need to study, I can retake the test. And I said, what are you talking about? And so I started inquiring with the teacher and the principal and found out that they were implementing some new practices at my son's school where teachers were not allowed to give zeros for work not done. They couldn't deduct points for work turned in late. And they had to allow test retakes. And I really felt that that was developing some bad habits in our students, including my own son. And so I went all the way up to the school board. I ended up talking to some school board members who didn't even know that these practices were being implemented at my son's school. It was a pilot program at the time. And in the end, I decided that I was going to fight these practices because the school board wasn't doing anything about it. So I formed a group of parents, concerned parents and community members, and we tried to lobby the school board to get rid of it. And unfortunately, we were not successful. And I was asked if I would consider running for the school board. And I said, I don't even know how to do that. but I had some folks, Ms. Weems, who's on the board now, Ms. McLeod, who was previously on the board, they helped me learn how to run for office and obviously do it successfully because I did win a five or six person race. I won the top spot in 2016 as an at-large candidate.
Excellent. That's such an interesting story to me to hear how someone who's really not politically inclined ends up in office. Cause I think it can be easy right now in our current moment in time, I think for people to get a little jaded about politics or a little cynical and think that, you know, everybody who's in politics is like a politician. And that has its own connotation. And one thing I've really enjoyed about these conversations that we've been having on Smart Citizen is that I'm getting to really get to know people and their stories, you know, no matter what their background is or how long they've been in office or what their experience level is and hear their path into it. So I think that's really, really cool. So why do you think, because obviously you saw some challenges that you wanted to address and then tried to you know, proactively go against those or you know, work towards a better solution, I guess you could say, with the tools that you had at hand. And when that didn't work, then you obviously ran for school board. So why do you think that the school board is important? And why should people care about voting for school board? You know, what things do you think people should take into consideration when they're voting? And I want to say one thing, because I'm not sure that everyone knows this, and we keep reiterating it every time I talk to someone from the school board, but I know that probably not everyone is watching every episode. So I want to make sure that people realize Virginia Beach is one of the few cities where you can vote for every single person on the ballot, no matter where you live. So no matter what district you're in, you can vote for every city council member and every school board member that's listed on the ballot. So you really need to know about all of them and have informed decisions to make about everyone that you're voting for, because it will affect you and your family, no matter who, you right. know, whoever ends up in those offices. So that said, is yeah. that an appropriate summary of you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And most times people don't know that. That is part of what I do when I'm campaigning, is to try to educate people about our awkward voting system that we have here in Virginia Beach.
And but, I believe there's a court case going on for that. Is that mm-hmm. right? Would yeah, you is. Support changing that system, or do you think it's good the way that it is now?
So I see both points of view on it. And if I were a city council person right now trying to make that decision, I would want more input from the community, because I do see both sides of it. My biggest concern is that people don't understand our current system. So I do think that we need to make it easier. Some cities, or a lot of cities actually, and towns in our state, they have local elections in May or June instead mm-hmm. of in November. And I actually kind of like that, because the local candidates, we don't just get lost in the fray of the higher level elections, and people tend to learn more and kind of come out and get to know the candidates a little bit better. So I would support a change for sure. Exactly what that change should be, I'm definitely open to hearing from the public on that.
Okay. I've read some interesting statistics or articles recently about people actually trying to move all elections to the same day, that first Tuesday in November, because it seems like historically when you have elections on different days, people are just very strongly programmed to vote on election day, you know, yeah. and it can be really hard to get that information out. I mean, I know for myself that I have found it really challenging. Like, those elections will come up and I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that was happening. Who is it? What's going on? You know, it's like super hard. I've always been surprised that cities don't do more to let people know, like, hey guys, this election is happening on this day and you need to show up.
No, and so, I completely get that. And that's an argument for keeping it in November, because the voter right. turnout would be higher. However, what I see when talking to people at the polls is they don't even know school board is on the ballot when they go to vote in November, and they're selecting people blindly.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know which is worse, someone just voting blindly for the first person on the ballot or having a lower voter turnout. So
that's a good point. That's
yeah. So that's kind of my opinion.
I read an interesting statistic. I know this is kind of going off from my original question, but this is what I like about this. We can talk about interesting yeah. things and we'll get to the other stuff. We have time. So I read an interesting statistic that, for the last mayoral election, which was a special election, which I believe happened in May or mm-hmm. sometime around then, for Bobby Dyer, when he took over, it was sometime in the spring. It wasn't in November for sure. I think it was like March.
It was maybe during the primaries.
Possibly. When they did the special election for mayor, we have 450,000 people that live in Virginia Beach. Only 13,000 people voted in that election. And he won by 443 votes. And I don't say that as any for or against for Mayor Dyer. I just find it fascinating that, you know, what is that? percent of the population decided who the mayor was going to be. And for people who say their vote doesn't count or, you know, aren't engaged in that kind of stuff, I mean, that's a very tiny margin, you know? And so I just, this is why I'm so passionate about doing this, because my goal with Smart Citizen, and I've told people this, like I want people to feel confident and informed voting, even if they don't vote in any way like I would. It doesn't have anything to do with me, for me, with how people are voting. It's that I want them to be informed and be confident that they know what they're doing, because it's a horrible feeling to show up to vote and see all these names on there and feel responsible for choosing someone and be doing eeny, meeny, miny, mo. It's like showing up to a test and having surprise, getting a pop quiz in math class or something that you didn't study for, at least when we went to school. That's not a good feeling, you know? So if you fail, you're in trouble. So anyway, we can get back to the questions, but I just find this fascinating. And we did make a video a couple weeks ago that is on my Facebook and Instagram and different places for how to prepare to vote and some practical ways for people to take their sample ballot and go through and look at it and be really prepared, because we do get that here in Virginia, at least. And it does give people that benefit.
Well, so, and that is something that I've noticed working the polls already, the in-person polls, when I've been up there passing out our literature. So many of the people I see, they have those sample ballots in their hands that they got in the mail, and they're checking them off. They're, you know, so, or they already have them checked off. So I do think that that helps getting that in advance.
So let's go back to the original question that I took us very far from. Why do you think the school board's important, and what factors should people take into consideration when voting?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that people don't realize is that we control almost $1 billion of taxpayer dollars, most of which comes from the city, the citizens of Virginia Beach. And we have ultimate city, we have control of that because we have a budget formula of what money comes to us. Now, city council has to ultimately approve the budget that we send to them, but for the most part, they usually approve just about everything that we send to them. And so that's important, the monetary aspect of your tax dollars. And then also, we are responsible for things such as the curriculum that our students are being taught. Now, we don't write the curriculum, but we approve textbooks. And we, you know, we appoint the superintendent who is in charge of what our students are being taught. So that's extremely important to me as a parent and as a citizen. I want to know that our students are being taught things that are going to be fair and balanced and also prepare them for their future and to succeed after high school. So those to me are the two most important reasons that people should pay attention to school board.
You came in with some big goals, obviously, when you came into the school board. So what have you accomplished in the time that you've been there that you would really like to highlight, or maybe the top two things that you've accomplished so far that you're proud of?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of my biggest platforms was when I ran in 2016 was transparency. I felt that as a parent, I wasn't getting the answers and people weren't telling me what was going on in our schools. And so that was huge for me. So I've really pushed very hard for that. I've been transparent myself as an elected official. I'm very, very outspoken on social media, letting the public know what our board meetings are going to be about, what topics we're going to discuss, what was discussed. Now, I've been attacked for that many times for being transparent, but that's important to me. And I think that I have fulfilled that platform that I had in 2016. We should be wide open. I really want us to, city council like streams their city council meetings on like on social media, on Facebook. We don't do that at the school board. That's something else I want to push forward. And then student discipline was also something that was brought to my attention. I didn't know how bad it was when I actually got on the board in 2016, but I was contacted by a lot of parents and students and teachers about the discipline problems that we were having in our schools. And I was trying to scream it from the rooftops and trying to get my colleagues to see what was going on, to get the superintendent and administration to see what was going on. And a little less than a year ago, I finally convinced the school board. They actually put together a committee to address student or to talk about student discipline issues. And they put me on the committee. And I convinced my colleagues on the committee to do an independent survey of our staff that would only come to school board.
Mm.
And so we were able to get some great feedback from that. And I believe that I finally convinced my colleagues on the school board and administration that we do have some major problems that we have to address. Now, at the end of our committee meeting, this was just a temporary committee, and we brought forward some recommendations, and then COVID hit.
Okay.
So those recommendations haven't necessarily been acted upon yet. One of the recommendations was for our policy committee to address cell phone issues that we have in our school. I do believe that many of our student discipline problems do stem from cell phone use, social media use. I sit in student discipline hearings as a school board member. And so if a student is appealing a case, a decision, they can appeal it to the school board and we will make the decision. It's a panel of three school board members.
Okay.
And I would say at least 75% of the cases that come before us, it stemmed from cell phone use. Either they were on social media during class and, you know, somebody said something nasty about somebody else's girlfriend and they ended up meeting in the bathroom and fighting. You know, things like that. And it stems from cell phone use in the classroom. Also, teachers have told me that it's such a huge distraction. It's become an addiction. I mean, not only for students, for us too. I catch myself sometimes like, oh, I need to go hide my phone. And our teenagers' brains, they're not wired to be able to make the right decisions. Especially since many of us adults can't.
Right.
So I believe we need to have some strict cell phone usage policies written by the school board and coming down from the school board. Our teachers have been struggling with this and they don't feel supported by administration or by the school board with the problems with cell phones. So that's something that even though it hasn't come about, I do think it's in the works. There have been a lot of other things that I have wanted to do that I have not been able to accomplish because I'm in the minority decision on most things. 8-3, it's an 8-3 vote on many things right now. And that's why I had a tough decision of whether or not I was going to run for reelection. I initially didn't want to. It's been a battle these last 4 years.
Mm.
But I was encouraged by my supporters and teachers and parents who said, you're a voice for us and we need you to continue. So I said, well, let me see if I can get some more like-minded folks elected to the board. And that's why I decided to run with a team of candidates so that we could have the ability to take back the majority and that I do have a better ability to implement the policies that I believe are important.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that for people who might not be familiar? I've seen those are the red signs, right?
Yeah.
With the four names.
Yeah.
And I've spoken to Lewis and Jennifer, who I believe are both part of your team. And then I think I have something scheduled with Joanna Morian,
right.
Or I'm working on it. So I've talked to a couple of the people who are part of that team, but can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, sure. So we call ourselves the Students First Team. StudentsFirstVB.com is a group website that we created to kind of have one platform of, we don't agree on everything, but on the important issues, such as student discipline and grading practices and vocational education, things like that, we do agree on. And I believe that we work very well together. And so we have just combined efforts in campaigning. We go to, if I can't go to one of, you know, if I have three events scheduled and they do too, you know, we kind of combine efforts. We started back in May or June with little red flyers that we pass out everywhere we go. to try to get our message out, and just kind of our signs have all four of our names and vote all four for school board to try to get that message out there that everybody that they can vote for all of us.
Right.
And so that's something that hasn't really been done in our city before, like we're doing now. I've never seen, actually, in my hometown where I got the idea for combining this sign, I was visiting my hometown a couple of years ago, and I saw that some of the folks on the town council, they had two names on one sign. They were running together.
Interesting.
And that's kind of what that sparked the idea of us running together. So
it is a really interesting concept, and it's interesting to me. So one topic of conversation that I've had with some school board and city council members is that, you know, one reason that I started Smart Citizen is that at least in Virginia Beach, all of our local elections are listed as nonpartisan on the ballot. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't give you the option to vote party line. Mm-hmm. And to some degree, I actually think that's good, because then it forces you to do some research and understand where people are coming from, you know, and learn a little bit about what candidates are bringing to the table. Though I understand that it can make it easier if, you know, you're walking in and didn't know those names were going to be there to say, okay, my values align more with this party, so I'm just going to go down this way. So I can understand the benefit of that. But the thing that's been interesting to me, and I don't know if this is how it's always been, it seems to be more pronounced this year, is that there are people running on pretty strong party platforms. And we've had some interesting conversations about, you know, I've just asked them, what do you think the effect is of that on an election that's meant to be nonpartisan? And I think for the most part, the response I've gotten is just that it helps people have a quick general idea of those values that, just like I said, it might be helpful if you're wanting to vote down the ballot. But when you show up to vote, it still says nonpartisan all the way down. So you guys are kind of taking a different approach, as far as I understand. So rather than running with a party, you're running with a group that are like-minded. Is that right?
Yeah, we're kind of doing both. We made this decision back in, you know, I think May, to run together as a team. And so typically in the past in Virginia Beach, the Democrats will endorse all the way down to school board. The Democrat Party endorses all the way down to school board. And they always have volunteers at all the polls passing out the literature. And the VBEA union also endorses, and most of their candidates are Democrat. Our team, we are this year the Republican Party for the first time in they have endorsed all the way down to school board. So we are also on the Republican Party voter guide as well. And so it's going to be interesting to see what the turnout is. I still like to say, you know, I still don't push my party affiliation, because most of the things that we discuss on school board aren't really aligned with either party or both parties, you know. We all think that teachers should have high pay. You know, we all think that we should award our teachers. I think we all agree that we need to have proper student discipline. And, you know, those are not necessarily something that are along party lines. So I still have a lot of people on the other side of the aisle who support me. And, you know, I want to keep that relationship. I don't, you know, want to say I've got an R behind my name. Even though I do, I represent everybody. And, you know, I wish more politicians at all levels would do that. I know sometimes it's hard with the rhetoric that's out there. But I do want to represent you know, I think Senator DeSteff says, somebody calls my office for help, we don't ask them if they're a Democrat or Republican. And I think that's extremely important.
You talked a little bit about what you have accomplished and alluded to some things you would hope to accomplish, and especially if you were to have this team with you. And there's no telling, you know, how the election will go. So on the other side of this, if you were to be reelected, what are some things that you would be hoping to do or change?
Yeah, so The discipline problems is probably one of the top things up there. I want to get some policies implemented on cell phone use. And so that would be one of the very first things, because I think our student discipline problems correlate to student and staff safety. And I think that as school board members, that has to be the top priority. So that would probably be the first thing that I would do. My colleagues on the school board, including my opponent, voted to get rid of valedictorian and salutatorian. And that's something that I think is very important. If we're going to award our superintendent with superintendent of the year, teacher of the year, athlete of the year, and I'm not opposed to those things, but if we're going to do that, why aren't we awarding our top academic achievers as well? So I would reverse that policy that was implemented and voted on 8-3 on our school board. A couple of years ago, I would reverse that policy as well. I would also address the grading concerns that I discussed earlier regarding, you know, teachers can't give zeros at some of our schools. And that's another thing that's interesting. So some of these grading practices are site-based. So in my viewpoint, you know, my colleagues like to talk about equity all the time, yet this is not equitable at all. We have some of our schools in our district, some of our schools who only allow a minimum grade of a 60, but some of our schools allow a minimum grade of a zero. So if we, let's say, for example, we have two middle schools, one that allows zeros, one that allows minimum grade of a 60, and those same students are competing for academies at the high school level. That's not fair. That they're not on a level playing field. So that's a really important issue for me that I would like to address. And I also think that these policies that say that, you know, there are no deadlines, students can turn their work in until all the way up until the end of the 9 weeks. I think that's teaching our students poor habits. If you show up to work late, you know, your boss may not be as sympathetic as our school system.
Right. Or not meeting deadlines on time. And exactly. I guess if they're going into college, that might be a rude awakening there as well, depending on where they go to school.
Absolutely.
One thing you mentioned on your website that I was curious about, you, in relation to school discipline, you talked about PBIS and you said it was costly and labor intensive. I'm not familiar with that term. Can you tell me what that means and why you would want to change it?
Absolutely. So it's called positive behavioral interventions and supports. The general idea is that you should reward students for positive behavior, not punish for negative behavior. And while I completely agree with the concept of rewarding positive behavior, I've done that as a parent myself, especially when my children were younger, it cannot be to the exclusion of consequences. And I believe that that's what has happened. My research on this type of method is that it really only works in class sizes of about 15 students or less. And we really exceed that. It takes time for our teachers to sit down and say, okay, little Johnny, you know, you turned in your work on time today. I'm going to give you a reward. So that's the main issue that I have with PBIS. And while the program itself, I don't think the intent of it is bad. I think that the implementation of it has been improper, and I just don't think that it will work in the class sizes that we have right now. I also believe that administrators may have, and superintendent swears he has not said this, but I do think that administrators are under the impression that they have to reduce referrals and suspensions. And I think that comes down from the 2014 guidelines of the Obama administration that said, schools, you need to reduce your suspensions and referrals of certain races. And that has translated into just reducing referrals and suspensions, no matter the behavior. And so I think that that was the unintended consequences of policies that started out at the federal level. And PBIS was one of the answers to reducing those referrals and suspensions. And I just don't think it was the right answer. I think that if we give firm, fair, and equal consequences, students will rise to the occasion, but they need to know the boundaries. I think it's very important for our students to know the boundaries, have those boundaries firm and fair, and again, equally applied across all levels.
Going back quickly to the valedictorian, salutatorian awards, I know that they swap them out in a sense for the Latin honor system, from what I understand. And that, as it was explained to me, gives a little bit more nuance to recognize students who maybe can't compete against students that are in the academies or some of those other things, gives them a level of recognition as well. Would you keep that system and then just reinstate the ValSal awards, if you will? Or would you want to change that as well?
That's a great question. So I was not opposed to the Latin honor system that has been implemented. I would change something about it right now with this Latin honor system and still having honors. We're going to have about, and this is how it is right now, about 60% of our students receive honors, 60%. And so it's almost like the everybody gets a trophy mentality.
Right.
So I would make those Latin honors a little bit more stringent. And you can still do valedictorian and salutatorian while still having the Latin honors. That's what colleges do.
Right.
So I don't see any reason why we couldn't do both.
Had a good question come in from the audience. I'll pop this up here on the screen. Amber was asking if Hispanics would get representation on the Equity Council. I know that's something that Luis Cortez is specifically, we talked about that in the interview with him, that was a concern he had with the new equity plan, is that he didn't feel like Asians or the Latin community were well represented there. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I honestly did not know a whole lot about our Equity Council itself until the equity policy was brought forward to the school board. And I started hearing concerns from the community that, okay, who's on this Equity Council? Who created the equity policy? And I said, well, let me look into that. And then I did hear from our Latino and Hispanic community and our Asian community, our Filipino community. We have a huge Filipino community here in Virginia Beach, and they're so active. And they did not have representation on the Equity Council. And so that was something that came out of, so one thing that I pushed with the equity policy is let's put this on hold. I'm not against having an equity policy, but I don't think that we've gone about this the right way. We need to make sure that we've had equal representation on the Equity Council who drafted this policy. And we didn't. We did not have, as far as I know, we did not have any Latinos or Hispanics. We did not have any Filipinos. We did not have any Asians. We did not have representation from all religious groups. So the military community. One of the big ones was this equity policy was supposed to also address students with special needs. And there was not anyone on there from our special education advisory committee or our special needs community, even though I was told after the fact that one of our members of our special education advisory committee.
There you go.
They had asked to have representation on the Equity Council, and they were not permitted. So that was another issue that I had with the equity policy, that they did not have representation. So that is something I've actually reached out to some citizens and said, hey, please put your hat in. Let them know that you want to be a part of this. And so I do think that the tide is turning on that. And hopefully we are getting some more equal representation on that committee.
What I understood of the equity conversation so far is that a policy hasn't necessarily been decided on, but there's a plan to get a study done that would then make recommendations for policy. Is that accurate, or is there
We voted on a policy. A five-page policy.
Got it.
And it was, in one of the reasons why I voted against it was because there were too many things left up in the air that were undecided in that policy. One of the questions that I had, the policy requires cultural responsive training for all of our staff and school board members. And I said, okay, can you tell me what this training is going to be? And I was told that they haven't decided yet. And I said, well, I don't feel comfortable voting on putting something into policy that hasn't been decided yet. So that was one of the reasons why I decided to vote against it. Another reason was it gave the superintendent basically unlimited unlimited funds to implement the policy. It basically says the superintendent has authority financially to hire consultants and to implement the policy, but yet there is no dollar amount set. I had suggested, hey, let's put a hold on this policy. I suggested, let's do a third party equity assessment to not only find out the problems, to identify the gaps and things like that, but also to find out the reasons for those gaps and the problems. That's what I wanted to do first, so that we could tailor the policy around the findings. And they've decided, you know, let's vote on the policy to find out what's going to be in it. And I just don't work. I don't operate that way. I want to know what the policy is going to entail and details of it before I vote on it.
That makes a lot of sense. Policy is very important. I had a conversation with a friend recently for her podcast, and she was asking me how women who don't feel like it's appropriate for them to talk about politics can be informed or how to make them feel more comfortable. And I recommended that they figure out what their core values are and then look at policies that align with their core values and then go after those things, and that, you know, it shouldn't necessarily be as much of a party issue or even like a topic issue, but like, look at the policies, look at what people are actually doing and actually implementing. And I think we lose a lot of that in our culture right now because we're so polarized, that it's hard, I think, for people to see past all of the noise and go, oh, this is what that means. Because a lot of things sound really nice. I mean, an equity policy sounds great. Obviously, we want everything to be equitable, you know, I mean, genuinely, I think that's important. But I would be with you in that and want to know what I was voting for, too. You mentioned special needs. I know part of your platform is supporting students with special needs, and you had a great story about your uncle, and it looked, he looks like a really special person, and it looks like you have a really great relationship with him. I've worked with a couple of autistic kids in the past, and so that's something I'm passionate about too. And one of my friends moved her daughter from another school district into the Virginia Beach district as I think a 4 or 5 year old with autism, and her vocabulary went from basically increased by 300%, something like that, just by changing schools. I mean, it was a dramatic improvement from almost nonverbal to full conversations.
Wow, easily, that's fantastic. You know,
it was incredible. And so I was like, wow. This makes a big difference. So what do you see in terms of, you know, special needs? How are we doing with, you know, caring for kids with special needs in our school district right now? And, you know, what would you want to change going forward?
Yeah, that's great. So it is really important to me. I grew up with my Uncle Dave, who he lived next door to me growing up, and he had Down syndrome. And as he got older, my parents, you know, kind of oversaw his care, and as my parents started getting older, they weren't able to keep up. And so I became his guardian in his last years of his life. He actually passed away just a couple of years ago. But I was blessed to be able to move him down closer to me in the last years of his life and spend a lot of time with him. So that was fantastic.
That's awesome.
And so what I see in Virginia Beach is we have some phenomenal special education teachers. These teachers they care so much about what they do, and they care so much about our students, that they are our biggest asset. The problems that I see is, number one, kind of the bureaucracy that comes with special education, the documentation and the things that you have to do, and that our administrators and teachers aren't necessarily equipped to understand all of that bureaucracy. For example, our assistant principals are tasked with the oversight of the IEPs, the individualized education plans. yet many of them had not been properly trained. It's not necessarily something they learned about in college, and it's not something that they were necessarily trained on. So Virginia Beach did receive some stern warnings from the Department of Education on some things that we were doing or not doing. And so one of the things that they've implemented is to have some more rigorous training for assistant principals to better understand the education process. I believe it's extremely important that we involve our parents in these decisions. And that's something that I've heard from parents is they feel like they're not being heard. Parents know their special needs child better than anyone else. And I think it is absolutely necessary that they are the center of the decisions that are made for their students. And so those are some of the things that we're working on that I think it is improving. It's an overwhelming task because we do have an increased population of students with special needs that we are dealing with. And it's a monumental task, and but we have our director of our special needs programs. They keep changing the names of all of our directors, so I don't remember what she's called anymore. I think she's very good. She's only been in the position for a couple of years. I think she's doing her best, but we've got to work harder for our special needs students.
They're important. They're worth working hard for. There's some really beautiful people. I've really, really enjoyed the opportunities I've had to work with some of those kids. They're just absolutely amazing. I have a couple more questions for you. I know we're getting close on time. Let's talk quickly about COVID, obviously a big topic this year. How do you feel about what's happening right now with the COVID phase back plans? And what would you change if you were reelected, or what would you really like to see going forward?
So I don't think we're moving fast enough in getting our students back to school for in-person learning for those who've chosen that option. And I've been pushing this issue since June. In June, I asked our superintendent what he was doing to prepare to get our students back for in-person learning. And the response was, we know how to do in-person learning. And so I don't think that has been planned out well enough. I know our staff's been working hard, but part of the problem is we implemented a plan, and the plan keeps changing, and the goalpost keeps getting moved for our students to get back to school. So right now we do have our pre-K through 5 students back to school, as well as our 6th and 9th graders. I was also told back in end of July, I think it was, that we had families choose option 1 or option 2. Option 1 being when the metrics allow, their students would be able to go back to school for in-person learning. Option 2 was they had to stay virtual for the whole first semester. Based upon the numbers that were provided to us, administration said, yes, we can accommodate all option 1 students for in-person learning. That's what we were told. That's what we started planning for. Well, a couple of weeks ago, the superintendent said, well, no, we're not going to be able to accommodate everyone. And so that's my frustration. We were told that they could. We told parents that we could. We have students, including my own sons, who've been out of school for in-person learning for 8 months. And I believe that the consequences of the isolation and virtual learning far outweigh any dangers of the coronavirus. And so while I also very much support and appreciate those who've chosen option 2 for virtual learning, and I think that they should be getting meaningful virtual learning, I also am advocating just as strongly for those who want in-person learning. So I will continue to push hard to get all of our students back. I wanted all of them back already, but I will continue to push for that.
I have a question that it's been an interesting one. I've asked a few school board members because it's come up more in the national conversation around school. And I think given the complexity, I guess you could say, of all of the different school options, if you will, that are happening right now, I think it's an interesting conversation. So what's your position on school choice vouchers or the money following the student? And I asked because, you know, I don't have kids, but I have a lot of friends who have kids, and I'm watching a lot of hybrid situations go on where, you know, both parents are having to work and the parents are having to virtually school their children, and they're creating pods with other families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes they're having to pay people to educate their children that were in public school, or, you know, there's millions probably of variations on this. So I'm not necessarily trying to advocate for it one way or another, but I'd be curious to hear your perspective just because I think it's an interesting time to have the conversation since our normal way of doing things has been so disrupted.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. And I'm very much a supporter of parental choice in education. I believe that money should follow the student at least at the state and federal level. And I think that our kids need choice. What works for some kids may not work for others. I use our military community as an example. What if a military family was stationed in a school district where the schools weren't very good schools, and they didn't have the money to pay for private school? They don't have any other choice. They're going to be in failing schools. So at the very least, I would like to see money follow the student at for our military students. I would like to see parental choice for all families. And we've lost 3,000 students in our division this year. I just got the numbers recently. We're down 3,000 students. 3,000 students who have said, Virginia Beach Schools isn't providing what I need. And some of those families are in private schools. Some of them are homeschooling. But there are many families who feel like they're not being provided what they need, and they don't have any other choice because they can't afford any other options. Hmm. And so I think that it's hurting our families who are economically disadvantaged. It's hurting them the most, I think, not having this choice. I'm careful when I say whether or not I support vouchers, because vouchers can mean different things. Hmm. I believe vouchers, someone pointed this out to me one time, if the government is giving out vouchers and then the students use those vouchers at a private school, then the government can control what is taught in those private schools. So I am a little careful about what I say regarding vouchers. It depends on what those vouchers are.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's a really great point. I know another concern I've heard from people is curiosity around medical freedom, which is a term that's used to mean a lot of different things. And I think a lot of people mean it specifically in regard to a mandated COVID vaccine. I know there's some different bills going through our General Assembly on a state level in regard to some things like the governor and his chief medical person, I forget his exact title, said he was going to mandate a COVID vaccine. And so I know some different people have had concerns about that and raised questions about it. Do you have a position about that being on the school board? Would you guys require a COVID vaccine for students to come back to school?
So, well, first let me preface this with, I am definitely not anti-vaccine.
Right. And I'm not saying that. I think this one's specifically,
my kids are vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. I think it's very important. However, I'm also very liberty-minded, and I would definitely not be in favor of mandating a vaccine for students. You know, we don't mandate flu vaccines. And I think that that's crossing the line of personal liberty when the government tries to mandate something like that.
I'm trying to decide which of the questions that I have left on my list I should ask you here at the last minute. I think we can't end the conversation without talking about school board. I know there's been some very public disagreements, I guess you could say, around school board recently. So going forward, how would you look to improve collaboration or just the dynamic, I guess you could say, on the school board if you were to be reelected?
That's a really good question. You know, I'm hoping that I'm going to get some colleagues elected with me who appreciate that we work for the citizens of Virginia Beach and we answer to the citizens of Virginia Beach, and that asking questions is important. I have been attacked from day one when I got elected on the school board. my colleague, Beverly Anderson, was the chair of the school board at the time. And just a month or two after being elected, we were in the front page of the newspaper because she changed my bio. She changed my online bio at the school website to kind of mean something that it didn't mean. And even the pilot editorial board stood up for me, and we don't always necessarily agree on things. So I feel like I was attacked from day one coming on this board, and I will continue to advocate for what I think is best. I've always tried to be respectful of my colleagues and ask questions. But I also won't just go along to get along. And I feel like that's what I'm asked to do so many times. And when I don't, I feel like I'm bullied and just blasted. And so I'm hoping that I can get some colleagues elected with me who are willing to collaborate and work together. And that's one thing about my team, the studentsfirstvb.com team, is they all are military veterans.
I noticed and that.
Yeah, and they've all had to work and with a variety of different people from all different backgrounds. And I really think that they understand the importance of diverse opinions, because I think that that's important as well. And collaborating and really, right now, I don't think on the board we value our differences, and we all need to do a better job of valuing our differences.
It's an interesting conversation, I think, that we're having on a national level around diversity, and something that I value a lot in my personal life is diversity of ideas. Mm. I think that's why one reason why I'm really enjoying getting to do this and talking to lots of different people who have lots of different ideas, because it challenges me in my own ideas to think more broadly. And obviously we need diversity in all the ways, all the things. And that's really important, but I get nervous if everyone sounds or thinks the same way that's surrounding me. You know, if everyone that's around me agrees with me, then I'm like, maybe I think need some broader friend circle.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And I think, but I think that one of the topics that we're leaving out of the diversity conversation is unity. We need to have diversity with unity. We can be diverse and have different backgrounds, but in the end, we need to come together as Americans and be united in our values of liberty and freedom and opportunity. And that's something that I feel like is being lost in, you know, in our conversations. So that's something else that I haven't, I know Mayor Dyer actually has talked about unity a lot. I think he's used that, and I appreciate that model.
What is one thing that you would really like anyone who's listening to keep in mind about you as they're going to vote this year?
Just that, you know, reach out to me if you have any questions. I try to be very transparent. I have a lot of information on my website, manningvbsb.com. You can learn more about my views. If you have any questions of why I voted a certain way on a certain topic, I try to always be very educated on the votes that I'm taking, and to have a reason why I vote yes or why I vote no. So I just would like for folks to get to know me. I've been very involved in our Virginia Beach community. I am involved in the Boy Scouts. My youngest son is a scout, so I'm a merit badge counselor for the Boy Scouts. And my oldest son is a wrestler, so I volunteer with the Great Neck Wrestling Club and do a lot with them. Very involved in my church as well. And so I'm not, you know, I know I'm a politician because I'm an elected official, but I'm a parent. I'm a spouse. I'm a parent. I'm a community member. I'm hopefully just, you know, one of you. I'm just open to speaking to anybody on any topic, anytime.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I popped it up on the screen here for anyone that's watching. You can learn more about Vicky, or it's Victoria Manning, on the Ballot, but I think you go by Vicky. Is that right?
Yeah. And you spelled it right too. Good job.
Oh, good. You can learn more about Vicky on her website, ManningVBSB, as in Virginia Beach School Board. So ManningVBSB.com or StudentsFirstVB.com is that group site that she referenced. And you can find out more about the other candidates. As I said before, we've already spoken with Luis Cortez and Jennifer Franklin, who are both running with you. And hopefully we'll get to chat with Joanna before we get to the election. We'll see. We're getting tight on time. But for anyone who's watching, don't forget, I've been hearing from a couple people that were asking about registering to vote or deadlines around absentee things. Unfortunately, the deadline to register to vote has passed, but you can still request an absentee ballot for Virginia, I believe, until the 23rd. So basically the end of this week. So definitely get that if you're not comfortable or aren't able to go vote in person. You can vote early till the 31st. And then obviously November 3rd is the general election day. So please get out and vote. Please make a plan and follow Smart Citizen. We're on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, at Smart Citizen USA. You can watch our interviews live on Facebook. And then the first few minutes go on Instagram and the full episodes are going up on YouTube. And if you don't have time or don't like watching videos and you just want to get the audio, we have the podcast version of the show anywhere that you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and share with a friend that would like to be informed, because we really want to get this information out and have it be helpful for people. So thank you so much again, Victoria Manning, for coming on with us and answering so many questions. Really appreciate your time and sharing with us today.
And thank you, Emily. Thank you for your passion of making sure that citizens are educated, especially in our local elections. I really
You're so welcome.